Greetings and welcome to Disquiet Voices Ecology Hour. I am your host, Chad Swimmer, and this show was originally broadcast on March 19th of 2024 on KZYX and Z, listener-powered community radio for Mendocino County to the world. We have a ridiculously action-packed show for you today, mostly talking about electricity, power, and the grid. We are going to follow up on a show a couple months ago on residential decarbonization. We're going to talk to two representatives from Sonoma Clean Power, Tanya Gibbons and Claudia Sissonfu. They are going to give us some information and some assistance in how we can decarbonize our own home. After that, we are going to hear from regular guest Matt Simmons, the climate attorney from EPIC, about wind power and the aging infrastructure up in Humboldt County. First, though, we are going to get a little update on developments in Jackson Demonstration State Forest. For those of you who are regular listeners, you can go off and make a cup of coffee or something, but the rest of you, I'm going to give you some cliff notes. Jackson State Forest, or JDSF for short, or the People's Forest, whatever you want to call it, was purchased by the state for $1.5 million from Casper Lumber Company in 1947. The idea was to make an economically sustainable forest. It is 80 square miles, and at that time, there were way over 20 square miles of ancient forests left, and another 20 square miles or more of well-recovered second-growth forest. This was not a moonscape. Under California Department of Forestry's tutelage in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, the old growth was reduced to 459 acres, less than one square mile. In the 90s, the movement to restore Jackson State Forest under Vince Taylor was able to score some huge wins against CDF then, which then changed their name to Cal Fire, got a little bit more of a law enforcement bent, and purchased some big helicopters. Vince's movement was able to stop logging in the forest for a total of 9 years. It has recovered, not to its 1990s levels, but the state has continued to treat it as basically timberland. And yes, there's been some incredible research there and a lot of maybe not so incredible research focused on basically how to make the timber industry work. This is important knowledge in the modern world, how to keep watersheds reasonably healthy while still removing trees from them. But this is not private timberland. This is the property of the state of California, and these are California redwoods, which are kind of a national symbol. And the movement to save Jackson's second incarnation started almost 4 years ago when it became clear that Cal Fire had plans to do a lot of timber harvest in people's backyards on the west part of the forest. And, you know, the whole idea of not in my backyard, well, if you can't protect your backyard, what can you even protect? We were not very happy about seeing some pretty large redwoods marked, some up to 7 feet diameter, and many of them had been cut, mostly in the red-tailed timber harvest plan, since the movement started. But in Casper, they were spared. The official avenue for input into Jackson State Forest's workings is the Jackson Advisory Group, but this is an advisory group of people who aren't Cal Fire. So it's kind of an extra layer of insulation between the timber harvest plans and the public. The public, if they want to comment on timber harvest plan, they can only do it through a laborious process, which really doesn't usually yield fruit unless you get and people willing to put in a lot of time to analyze these plans. And even then, the comments don't usually do much. We are encouraged to present to the Jackson Advisory Group, which is a far more laborious process. And even if we can convince the Jackson Advisory Group, then they just offer a recommendation to Cal Fire, which is not a veto on a plan that the public doesn't approve of. To be fair, many of the plans that I have looked at, I think look pretty good if I'm going to support timber harvest, but a lot of them really don't look like the best choice of trees. But the bottom line for many of this is public matrimony, and this is should be ours and really should belong to the people who it was stolen from 150 years ago. So tribal co-management is actually in the works. However, the chair of the Jackson Advisory Group is George Hollister, who has not shown much openness whatsoever for any change. The vice chair is John Anderson, who is the forest policy director for Mendocino Redwood Company, which owns 350 square miles of Mendocino and Sonoma County and logs it. Many people have complained about their leadership, but as we'll hear in just a moment, that the Board of Forestry just reaffirmed their positions for the next 3 years. Let's go to Richard Ginger.
I would like to welcome Richard Ginger to the show today. He is on the board of the Redwood Forest Foundation International and Why Forests Matter, which has worked with retired CDF director Richard Wilson to change the way that California manages its forests. He has also been a tireless watchdog on the workings of the Board of Forestry, California's unelected body that has the final say on forest management. Richard, thank you so much for all of your work over the years, and thank you for joining us via Zoom from Whale Gulch. How are you?
Yeah, it's there's so much perspective and so much going on. So I'm going to try and just delve into what's going on with the Jackson Advisory Group, which is basically controlled by CAL FIRE and the Board of Forestry. And as they're trying to keep the future of Jackson Demonstration State Forest sort of strangled in that triumvirate there, and the Jackson Advisory Group is sort of used by CAL FIRE as an approval mechanism for harvest plans and other thing else, and then the Board of Forestry applies their final say whether they're going to let it go or not. Mm-hmm. And it's supposed to be a consensus process. I would encourage people to find out as much as you can by being familiar with the Board of Forestry and what they're up to in a lot of different ways. And the whole thing with modernizing the hardwood policies, mm-hmm. and in trying to modernize the management of Jackson that includes co-management. Mm-hmm. And these are all things that have been actually articulated by the Brown administration and the Newsom administration and CAL FIRE by having this, it's like keeping it out of the perspective of California, because how Jackson, the biggest state forest and the flagship of the forest, state forest system, goes, that is about probably the only way you're going to get any leverage to actually modernize forest practices, not just in Jackson, including co-management, but over the whole state, all the forests in the state.
Well, Richard, let me point you in the direction. At the last Board of Forestry meeting, a few things happened that were really disheartening for people like you and me. Can you talk about that?
Well, I think it was actually disheartening for a whole bunch of people that aren't like you and me. Indigenous people for a big factor there.
Yes.
It's not unlike Trump's delay, delay, delay. CAL FIRE tries to get the good public relations and all that, but they're really delaying the modernization and the implementation of co-management. And one of the big problems with it, most of the people are feeling that you really need to have a co-management process and people set up that's real before you move ahead with determining what the modernization is going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that happened recently about the members of the JAG is sort of they're really upped it up. I think JAG used to meet once or twice a year, and now they're trying to have them meet five times a year.
Yeah.
And they're jacking up the public relations, too, about how hunky-dory everything is. When in actuality, even the State Forest staff person head, Kevin Conway, and Kim Rodriguez, that people may know of, is an incredible... He's retired now from UC Extension, have called for, it's way overdue for new leadership of the JAG, or the Jackson Advisory Group.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like about person, so to speak, but there needs to be a turnover. Because although some people could argue what a good guy George Hollister is, who's been the chair of the JAG for a long time, he really doesn't really believe there's anything about climate change that's valid. And what consensus is, because the JAG is supposed to, by their charter, try mightily to reach consensus. And the problem was when they had the lawsuits that Vince and the other people have brought for 8 years or so, and they had the JAG was founded, and they unanimously were some of the heaviest timber people, and Linda Perkins and others came to a consensus on a management plan for Jackson in 2011, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the board sort of gutted big parts of it and just really, they voted in this one harvest plan. I won't get into the details of it, Camp 1. And for the first time, the JAG did not unanimously support a plan, a project that CAL FIRE presented to them and unanimously support. For the first time, there were two oppositions and one abstention by the members. And so this is sort of, we thought in December, that happened in November, we thought in December they would actually try and come to grips with that. What does that mean? And they got the people that abstained or opposed it to write how strong was their opposition and so forth. So they kept putting it off. There's a meeting in January, they had no meeting in February, and then they had a meeting on March 6th.
These are Board of Forestry meetings we're talking about.
They voted to extend Hollister, George Hollister's membership on the JAG and John Anderson's for another 3 years without coming to grips with either the consensus process for the JAG, or who is going to be the chair of the JAG. And people, as I said, have called for change in leadership. And the director of forestry appoints the chair and the JAG itself, the vice chair. So the upshot coming out of this meeting earlier this month is they're going to actually have, it was pushed for them to have the management committee really delve into the whole Jackson issue, which they should have and have put off for a couple of years now. Mm-hmm. They were going to have the JAG meeting the 7th of March, the day after the board meeting, but they didn't have all their stuff together. You know, it's like completely, so they postponed it. So they're gone to the next JAG date, which is May 9th, Friday, May 9th. Mm-hmm. So I just, people got to like get a prize and go to those websites of the say, Jackson Coalition and Land Back and the Trail Stewards to get what you can and what's going on. And it's the whole PG&E thing's going on. There have been special hearings about those exemptions for right-of-ways for utilities. And there's going to have rules in April that have been written up about retention of mature tan oaks. Mm-hmm. And we have to keep on them. Every month, people need to take their principles about Jackson and other forestry issues and be present, hopefully as much as possible in person, but definitely remotely on a Zoom or other webinar links. Because we've got to get this Jackson issue, just like the PG&E is of statewide importance, the management of Jackson is of statewide importance. Mm-hmm. Because if they can't get the right model in state-owned land, that the people of California's land, for forestry, for climate, for co-management, they ain't going to get it.
Richard mentioned that they reappointed George Hollister and John Anderson. And really quickly, George Hollister has publicly stated that he thinks climate science is philosophy. He, during the pandemic, showed up at numerous meetings, the only one not wearing a mask. He has also been extremely rude to Native Americans who have showed up at the meetings, and was so rude that one spoke to Dawn Blake, who is a Yurok tribe member who's on the Board of Forestry, and she abstained from the vote because she felt that it was her only option. John Anderson's a whole different story. He is the forest policy director of Mendocino Redwood Company, and he has voted to approve. And just to clarify, the JAG does not vote to approve the actual paperwork of the plan. The JAG is an advisory board that votes to approve that this plan is within the management plan. He has voted to approve numerous plans that then Mendocino Redwood Company bought, which I don't think textbook conflict of interest gets any more clear than that. So this is all really problematic, and we're getting basically business as usual with a lot more work on the plates of the people who are, doing the JAG to basically be a public relations arm of CAL FIRE.
Reform is a light way of putting it. There needs to be a real reform. And I didn't mention it. I'm glad you did. It was heartening to have Dawn Blake, a woman, I believe, who's the head of the Yurok Forestry Program, is on the Board of Forestry, abstain from supporting that extension those 3 years. Very good. So that's a real short Reader's Digest version. I just can't overemphasize with emphasis on people being involved and paying attention and speaking out where speaking out needs to be done.
Well, thank you so much, Richard. We appreciate your work over the years and your work this very day.
Thank you, Chad. And there's a whole lot of stuff going on, a lot of fishery stuff going on. Let's get those Eel River dams out and follow and support what's going on with the Klamath.
Yeah. And I actually would like to mention there is a publication, the Forest River News from Trees Foundation. And this is a paper publication, but it's also at treesfoundation.org. And it is a great publication with lots of fisheries information. And Richard is a regular columnist in the Forest River News.
A lot of good stuff. And it's really getting expanded and a whole new young blood. Young blood's coming out.
Excellent. Well, thanks, take you, Richard, and have a great afternoon.
Thank you, Chad. Take care.
That was Richard Ginger via Zoom from Whale Gulch on the Sinkione Coast. Richard has been a longtime forest defender, sitting through hours and hours and hours of the most boring meetings in the world, where those things that we wish didn't happen get decided upon. I would like to remind you again about the websites that Richard just mentioned, to definitely go to savejackson.org, go to pomolandback.com, and go to the mindotrailstewards.org. If you feel like you need to write a comment to the Board of Forestry, and heck yes, please do, publiccomments@bof.ca.gov. Let me repeat that, publiccomments@bof.ca.gov. There's all kind of kinds of things that you could say, but first off, just like no operations in Jackson State Forest until the new management plan is in place. We at Disquiet Voices would like to thank the Cloud Forest Institute for being our fiscal sponsor. With their organizational support, we are able to provide for you shows of this quality with content both local and international. Check them out at www.cloudforest.org. And if you'd like to donate to us or to them, go to the donate page for info. Thank you. We are going to head over to the main theme of the show, power, and where it comes from and how it gets to us. As listeners know, a couple months back, we had a tour of Evan and Erica Mills' house, which has really been a decade-long project of decarbonization. It's pretty incredible. But we had a lot of comments from listeners that they just did not know where to start if they wanted to do something like this themselves. Obviously, this is a challenge, but it's something that we can all do. In the notes for today's show, which you can find at disquietpride.buzzsprout.com, we have a bunch of information, including a great sheet of resources that Evan Mills made for us. You'll also be able to find resources from our upcoming interview. The first thing I really wanted to talk about is just this understanding of what electricity is. For some people, it's so obvious, and for some people, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. Like, you plug something in the wall and it turns on. What is electricity? Well, basically, it's the flow of electrons. And in the making of this show today, I've really come upon kind of a new way of thinking about it myself, is that, say, a cable is like a pipeline, a gas pipeline, an electron pipeline. So if I am using my electric weed eater, when the battery runs out, it's like the tank of electrons ran out, and I have to go fill it up by plugging it in, and then we get electrons from the grid. There's a bunch of things that you're going to hear in the next three interviews, the rest of the show today, that you might hear more than once in different ways, and hopefully this will help you frame your own understanding of this, because, yeah, it's not something we think about in our daily life, but we should be, because as all of us in rural areas know, when the power goes out, we're like, wow. We are going to start with a segment from our intern, Abilene Comstra, who has done a lot of research on Sonoma Clean Power and its origins. And she'll give us a little Cliff's Notes. And then we're going to go to Tanya Gibbons and Claudia Sumfu on what resources are available to us as Sonoma Clean Power customers.
The formation of Sonoma Clean Power was catalyzed in 2002 when California communities voiced their interest in legislation that provide local public control of their electrical supply. From this call to action, Assembly Bill 117, called Community Choice Aggregation Law, was drawn up and passed. This bill permitted local governments to buy electricity for their communities. In response, Sonoma Clean Power was founded in 2014. In 2017, Sonoma Clean Power services were expanded to Mendocino County. Its mission is best described as working to solve climate change today. A representative from Sonoma Clean Power even spoke about energy at my high school here in Fort Bragg. Sonoma Clean Power is vastly different from PG&E, as they are a publicly owned utility, while PG&E is a for-profit, investor-owned company. Despite Sonoma Clean Power being a model program, there have been many criticisms of it. Customers were automatically enrolled in the service in 2014. There was even a lawsuit over it. In Schmid versus Sonoma Clean Power, Schmid argued that being automatically signed up to the service was an infringement on his First and 14th Amendment rights. The court dismissed Schmid's claims in an unpublished memorandum. In addition, some have been concerned about the amount of infrastructure that needs to be developed to support these renewable resources, as well as the education that needs to be provided to customers about energy. However, many are pleased with Sonoma Clean Power. For example, the renewable energy that Sonoma Clean Power distributes not only reduces emissions and therefore climate change, but also does not add pollutants to the air. Another positive, which is not only associated with Sonoma Clean Power, is that non-renewable energy power plants are often in areas where land is inexpensive and there are few legal challenges, unlike renewable energy power plants. These areas are often where the most disadvantaged Black, Indigenous, and Latinx communities are located. These communities are then disproportionately affected by asthma, heart disease, cancer, and other health problems created by these plants. Sonoma Clean Power providing communities with cleaner energy alleviates these issues in our communities of color in California. Luckily, there are many companies similar to Sonoma Clean Power: Peninsula Clean Energy, Clean Power SF, 3CE, Desert Community Energy, Clean Power Alliance, Lancaster Energy, to name a few. Where is this power coming from? And how exactly does the power grid work? Doesn't all the electricity mix in the wires, giving everyone the same power? To answer the first question, the power is coming from throughout California. The second question, however, is a bit more complicated. As every house and business in the country is connected to the grid, electricity is tracked by contracts to make sure the people who fund the operation of cleaner and renewable power plants get the credit for the production of those cleaner plants. There are three steps in the process of getting energy to your home or business. First, the energy must be produced at a power plant. Next, power lines carry the electricity at a very high voltage, then in a process called stepping down, substations convert the electricity to a lower voltage. Finally, the power is distributed.
That was Abilene Comstra. You are listening to Disquiet Voices Ecology Hour, based at KZYXNZ, listener-powered community radio for Mendocino County and beyond. You can stream and listen to archives at kzyx.org. I would like to tell you about something Friday, March 22nd at 9 a.m. It is Forthright Radio. And if you can't listen to it live, you could be listening to it on kzyx.org by putting in the time. Forthright Radio host Joy LeClaire talks to Stephanie Dre about her latest book, Becoming Madam Secretary, a well-researched historical fiction based on the life of the first female U.S. cabinet member, Frances Perkins, the Secretary of Labor in the FDR administration. That is Forthright Radio every other Friday at 9 a.m. here on KZYXZ and on the web at kzyx.org.
Hello, I'm Chad Swimmer, and I'm here on the Ecology Hour, and I am introducing myself in a way I haven't before, but in the case of the following subject, I'm a homeowner. I've lived on the coast of Mendocino County for most of 38 years, and my house is grid tied. We have a substantial solar system, enough to supply about 6 to 8 people, because we have a couple different residences and some family. And we, as grid tied, we buy and sell our power through the grid. And I have two guests with me from Sonoma Clean Power, and I'd love it if you could briefly each introduce yourselves. How about start with Claudia?
Sure. Thanks so much for having us. My name is Claudia Sisomfu. I am the Public Affairs and Advocacy Manager at Sonoma Clean Power. Been here for about 6 years, and I was born and raised in Sonoma County out in Forestville. So, yeah, a little bit about me.
And I'm Tanya Gibbons. I'm the Customer Service Manager over at the Advanced Energy Center. I was almost born and raised in Sonoma County, but I've been a longtime resident.
Well, Claudia and Tanya, thank you so much. I will let you pick who wants to answer each of these questions, but this is dovetailing on a preceding episode last December when we talked about how people could decarbonize their own residential use in their own lives. So for those of us homeowners and just average citizens attempting to lessen our impact on the planet, we have two options that relate to our providers, our power providers, and obviously it's conservation. And more important towards you, it's our directed purchasing power. And people like myself located near the coast in Mendo, we had the option a few years ago to choose Sonoma Clean Power. And I would hazard a guess that most of us who did become your customers didn't and still don't fully understand how it can be possible to buy power from different entities through the same transmission lines. And when you start to break it down, it makes sense. But can you give us your most concise explanation of how this is possible and why purchasing our power from you is different than, say, from PG&E?
Yes, it's a great question. And it's one we get a lot from our customers. People often ask how they can be sure that they're getting Sonoma Clean Power's cleaner energy. when their neighbor might not be a Sonoma Clean Power customer, and it's all going through PG&E's lines. So I'll try my best to break it down for you all. The way that I like to explain the electric grid to folks is to think about California shared grid as like a pie. All utility customers are connected to the shared grid in California. And the responsibility of public power providers like Sonoma Clean Power or investor-owned utilities like PG&E is to make sure that they're putting enough ingredients into the pie to meet the needs of their specific customer base. Where we source those ingredients from is up to the power provider. And each provider in California has different priorities, different contracts, and varying commitments to, for example, purchasing more renewable energy or purchasing from more in-state resources. So all of us in California are pulling from that same pie. The more clean ingredients or clean energy that we use to fill the pie, the less dirty ingredients or dirty energy goes into that pie. Once power is converted into electricity and added to the shared grid, it's basically impossible to tell, you know, the difference between an electron that came from a clean energy source and one that came from a polluting energy source. That's why it's really important to track which energy sources are being used to generate our electricity. How the electricity is generated is where you really find the impacts. For example, when Sonoma Clean Power contracts for electricity from the geysers, they turn on a geothermal unit to operate on our behalf. If instead we contracted for electricity from a natural gas plant in the Central Valley, then that facility would increase its output and its emissions to account for our needs. That's the big difference between getting your electric generation service from SEP versus PG&E. For Sonoma Clean Power, our priorities have always been to have a higher percentage of renewable and carbon-free sources in our power mix while still remaining cost competitive to PG&E. So SEP contracts with more renewable and low carbon sources to supply our local demand. We also incentivize the development of new renewable energy facilities in Mendocino and Sonoma counties to improve our energy independence and to lower long-term costs for customers. And because we're a public agency and not a private corporation, you as a customer actually have the opportunity to voice what kind of energy sources you would like Sonoma Clean Power to procure and what sources you want us to avoid. So really giving you the power to change the pie recipe, if you will. So we have our board of directors and we have a community advisory committee that meets every month. And both of those meetings are open to the public to attend and participate. So long story short, if you are a Sonoma Clean Power customer, SCP is responsible for making sure there's enough energy on the grid to meet your household or your business's needs. And PG&E maintains the poles and the transmission lines that bring that electricity to you.
Mm-hmm. So, and I know that a lot of the electricity that's in the grid in California comes from nuclear power sources, which are not considered, mm-hmm. which are considered carbon free. And can you speak to that?
Yeah, so we really go off of what our board of directors, it's made up of elected officials from all of the communities that we serve, including Mendocino County, Willits, Fort Bragg, Point Arena. So based on what the board has heard from its constituents, nuclear power is one of the sources that at this time, they would not like to see Sonoma Clean Power purchase. And so, you know, we follow that sort of direction. And that's sort of that public oversight process and that transparency that you get with having a public agency like Sonoma Clean Power procuring your energy versus, you know, an investor-owned utility like PG&E, where you don't really have the opportunity to say, hey, that's a source that we don't want in our power mix.
And on your website, you list where you get all your power, right?
Yes. So on our power sources page on our website, you can see a breakdown of the different sources of energy. You mentioned, you know, carbon-free sources Hydropower is a big one that we use for our default power mix. So we have two different power mixes. We have our default service, which is Clean Start, 50% renewable and 91% carbon free. Large hydroelectric power is not considered renewable in California, primarily because they didn't want to incentivize new dams, the creation of new dams, but it is a carbon-free resource, and a very valuable resource for us to have. If you would like to just have 100% renewable energy, that's all locally generated, we have our Evergreen service. It's a little bit extra per month. For the average residential customer, it's about $13 more a month, but that is entirely generated in Sonoma, Mendocino counties through local solar projects and geothermal power from the geysers.
It's very difficult for an average homeowner to even know where to begin. Does Sonoma Clean Power offer assistance to us in identifying and plugging these leaks and, you know, finding out who's going to help us with this?
Well, we definitely want people to know about our DIY toolkits. They're available at all of the Mendocino County libraries, and all you need is your library card, and you can check it out for 2 weeks at a time. It comes with a number of tools to help you measure how much energy and water your home uses, as well as some free goodies that you can install in your home. It comes with LED light bulbs, weather stripping, flow-low shower heads, outlet gaskets, and more. You know, most people don't realize how much energy a household uses. Just to heat up water for simple things like your shower, doing your dishes, doing your laundry. And that's why these toolkits are focused to saving both energy and water. Claudia, do you want to mention some of the tools that come in the toolkit?
Sure. So there's a couple tools worth mentioning that will help you identify and plug those leaks that you mentioned. So the first one is a kilowatt meter, which helps measure the energy use of appliances or devices in your home, even when they're turned off. So even when, you know, you have stuff plugged in and it's turned off or on standby, it's still drawing a little bit of electricity. So you can plug in, for example, your refrigerator, or maybe you want to plug in your computer station. Plug it into this kilowatt meter for at least 24 hours so you get an accurate read. And that will give you a good sense of how much energy that device is pulling and whether it's having a significant impact on your bill. So you'll actually be able to see in dollars how much that device or appliance is costing you each month. Another tool is the infrared laser thermometer, which can help you check for drafts throughout your home, especially around doors and windows and vents. And then you can use the weather stripping and the outlet gaskets that come in the toolkit to help patch those gaps. If you have an older refrigerator or water heater that doesn't have a temperature reader, the toolkit comes with thermometers to make sure that both are at the ideal temperature that you want them and that they aren't costing you extra each month. And lastly, the guidebook that comes with the toolkit, it's in both English and Spanish. It's got a ton of other tips. It has instructional videos for how to use the tools and contents of the toolkit, and a lot of helpful information for how to tighten up your home's performance.
I would like to reiterate what Tanya just said. These DIY toolkits are really cool. I had no idea about them. That all you have to do is go to your library with your library card and check one out and bring it home. And it's actually a really fun thing to do with kids. You can kind of make a little list of things that you need to take care of and then come back, you know, get the DIY toolkit a few months later if you've done some work and see what you did. See if it actually, you know, made any difference.
As far as in-person assistance, we know it's a bit of a drive for those of you in Mendocino County, but I would like to mention our Energy Center in downtown Santa Rosa. The center is designed to be a full-service customer center, and we can assist with billing questions if you need help, for example, reading your bill or finding out, you know, what your current rate plan is. And we can also help with rebate questions, incentives, or you can just come in and get an up-close look at some energy-efficient appliances for your home. We highly recommend that you visit us if you're in town, but unfortunately at this time, Sonoma Clean Power does not provide home assessments. But if you're income qualified and enrolled in CARE or FAIR discount programs, PG&E does offer a free home assessment. And if you're a Sonoma Clean Power customer, you're able to take advantage of both Sonoma Clean Power and PG&E programs.
We do also have one other program that's very close to launching. SEP will actually be able to mail our customers what we're called an energy savings box and directly to their home. And inside it has a number of products like LED light bulbs, power strips, and smart outlets that are all designed to help you easily and quickly begin reducing your energy use. So our hope for that program is to specifically reach renters and folks who are struggling with high energy bills. So stay tuned for that.
What you were saying a minute ago, Tanya, brings me to the question that just, it's, I think, one of the things that is very daunting for so many of us, and especially people who are our seniors who are trying to upgrade and improve their situation. Mm-hmm. What are resources that are out there for navigating the world of the rebates and tax credits that make this possible for people to make the transition?
Mm-hmm. Well, we currently do offer rebates on heat pump water heaters, heat pump HVAC systems, and induction ranges for cooking. And on our website, which we'll provide you the link, you can find information about Sonoma Clean Power's rebates. And it also walks you through the guidelines for eligibility and how to apply. Another great resource that we like to share with the public is called theswitchison.org. You can go to this website. It's very easy to use. Plug in your zip code. It comes up with a list of rebates, tax credit information, and qualified contractors in your area. And you can always give us a call at the Energy Center. We have a great team that can help answer any questions. Or if you'd rather come in person, we can help walk you through the process.
What is the address there? Because I want to come down and take a look.
Yes. The address, 741 4th Street. If you know where Russian River Brewery is, we're right down the street.
Right,
or the local library.
Yeah, most of us get down to Santa Rosa pretty regularly. So that is a stop for yeah. us. We're trying to improve our situation in our house. So the more we can see and learn. This has been really great for me and informative. Is there anything else you'd like to let let our listeners know?
Yeah, so I'll make a plug. If you have Facebook or Instagram, give us a follow. We do a series now called FAQ Fridays, where we address common misconceptions about Sonoma Clean Power, what we do, who we are. We also share a lot of resources on there and information about our different customer offerings.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to remind everybody that the Energy Center is a resource for you. So if you want to reach us, you can get a hold of us via email, call us, or come visit us in person.
Great. Well, thank you so much. And I appreciate it. We'll hopefully be sending people your way.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having us.
Take care.
That was Claudia Sisumfu and Tanya Gibbons of Sonoma Clean Power. George Russell on guitar. You are listening to the Ecology Hour, and we are going to go to Matt Simmons, the climate attorney for the Environmental Protection Information Center up in Arcata, California.
A difference. Matt, thank you for taking the time.
Thanks for having me, Chad.
Of course. I always love to hear from you. Let's get right to it. We have a lot of things to talk about today. Our show is mostly focused on electricity, residential use, how it's transmitted, and how it's produced. You have recently been focused on wind power in Humboldt County, and I am really excited to hear about it.
Yeah. So for folks who don't know, there is a proposed wind farm off the coast of Humboldt County. It'll be one of the first two wind farms in the west coast of the United States ever. And, you know, I'm very focused on it because it's going to impact us up here in Humboldt quite a bit. But I think if it's a success, there's a potential for other wind farms to be built, you know, further south down in Mendocino and other places in California. So Humboldt is sort of the tip of the spear on this issue, but there's more to come. Yeah. Is that a good?
Well, it's wind power is one of those things that for a lot of us, we don't know what to make of it. Like, oh yeah, well, of course it sounds great. It's natural and you aren't burning anything to do it. And then somebody says, well, what if the albatrosses run into those big blades or whatever? And it's just, we really don't understand it. Are you in favor? Are you against it? Tell us all about it.
Yeah. So EPIC's position right now is that we are in favor of responsibly developed offshore wind. And, you know, I think the key here is that we're going to require years and years and years of research and study in order to get this project right and to do it in a good way. From what I have seen so far, the environmental impacts of offshore wind are considerably less than onshore wind, and they're way considerably less than burning fossil fuels for electricity, which is how we currently get most of our electricity. And so you've got to, at some level, you have to like weigh this against the status quo and how we're currently getting electricity. And so, you know, we're hopeful that this can be, yeah, go ahead.
I'd just like to interject for listeners that two things that they have. Matt is from EPIC, the Environmental Protection Information Center, and they have a really informative blog that gets into this. And Matt writes most of it, I think, or quite a bit of it.
But I wouldn't say that. I'd say I'd write a quarter of it.
A few people write it, but that it is one of the things that they have talked about on the blog is this wind farm. So you can get a lot more information on it. Sorry to stop you. Keep going.
No, so you wanted to talk about electricity and transmission. So one of the key aspects with offshore wind is you're going to generate all this electricity 20 miles offshore. How do you get it to people? And specifically, how do you get it to more populous areas of the state? We up here in the North Coast don't actually use that much electricity because our population is fairly low. And so you have to transport the electricity somehow to areas with a higher load is the technical term. It's the amount of electricity required at any given time. And so in order to do that, they're going to have to build new transmission lines, which is something that EPIC has been looking at very closely because, you know, it's both going to have a definite environmental impact to build these things. But there's also an opportunity, I think, for communities that currently don't have reliable electricity to get more reliable electricity, for us to be a bit more connected to the rest of California and the grid. And so making sure that that's done both in an environmentally and equitably way is really important to EPIC.
Mm-hmm. And on the blog is a really great explanation of all of this. Even I didn't realize that one nation, the Hoopa Nation, has really unreliable power. And tell us about that.
Yeah. So here in Humboldt, you know, basically the power is better the closer you were to the timber industry. That's why all that electric infrastructure was built in the first place, was to power the timber industry. And so a lot of folks who live, you know, kind of the main areas of our county they don't have really reliable power. And so the Hoopa tribe is one example. We actually interviewed the director of their sort of energy and public utility for our podcast, and she talked about it. I know folks up in Klamath and Weichpec and Orleans all have similar problems. And so something that we're thinking about is, okay, Humboldt or the ocean off of the coast of Humboldt is going to generate all this power. Let's make sure that it's benefiting people locally as well as benefiting the entire state of California and the world, really, because we all need to be using renewable energy rather than burning fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about where does Humboldt get its power from right now?
Yeah. So most of Humboldt's power comes from a natural gas plant called the Humboldt Bay Generating Station. It's located just south of Eureka. It used to be a nuclear power plant, but they switched it over to natural gas. And so basically 24/7, we are burning fracked natural gas in order to keep our lights on. Now, obviously, there's some solar panels and some renewable energy on our grid, but it is not nearly enough to turn off that natural gas station. Mm-hmm. Power is tricky, right? Because you need it all the time, right? And so in order to really guarantee that you could shut off that power plant, we actually need transmission upgrades in order to connect to the grid and be able to draw on all these different sources of power around the state 24/7. And then we can maybe shut down that power plant and stop, polluting with all these greenhouse gas emissions locally.
Mm-hmm. Well, what would be the scale of this wind farm in comparison to that plant?
So this is the part that I think is going to freak people out. So just know that I am also freaked out by it. these wind turbines are massive. They are some of the ones already being built are in the 900 to 1,000 feet tall range.
Oh.
And they're talking about building even bigger ones in the future. They're trying to make them as big as they can. Because the bigger they are, the more power they generate per rotation, and you get this economy of scale. So these things are massive, and the way it's working on the East Coast right now, so I should say the East Coast is ahead of us on this. The East Coast wind farms, it's one turbine every nautical mile in a grid. So if you imagine a grid of dots, each a nautical mile separated horizontally and vertically from each other, that's how close together these turbines are. And then each turbine is, 800 or 900 feet tall. So roughly the size of the Eiffel Tower for anyone who's been to Paris. So you got to imagine like 30 or 50 Eiffel Towers spread out by about a mile each in the ocean, generating electricity. It's a genuinely kind of mind-blowing project. It will generate, if the Humboldt wind energy area is fully built out, it will generate roughly a fifth of California's electricity.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay. So while I'm processing that, you stated on your blog, and you got into this a minute ago, but I want you to elaborate or get right to the point that we can't really decarbonize without improving the electrical infrastructure in Southern Humboldt, I think you said, but I think the extension would be in all of rural America. Would you agree?
Yeah. And so let me explain why. So renewable energy, like solar and wind, the term that people use is it's intermittent. It is not on all the time, right? A coal-fired power plant or a nuclear power plant, you just flip a switch and it's on or off. Solar doesn't work that way, right? The sun has to be out. Wind doesn't work that way. The wind has to be blowing. But the good news is that the wind is always blowing somewhere, right? And so if you have a lot of wind turbines spread out across the country and they're all connected on one grid, you can have energy 24/7 because the wind is always blowing somewhere and you're always generating electricity somewhere on that grid. And so then you add solar and you add some batteries and you can have a 24/7 renewable powered electric grid without burning any fossil fuels. But it requires both building sort of more renewables than you would ever need at any one time, because some of them won't be working at some times. Mm-hmm. And then it also requires connecting it all with a lot of transmission. Now, for really, really rural areas, I think the solution is going to look different. I think it's going to be sort of microgrids and sort of more local solutions to this.
Yeah.
But for cities and, you know, Eureka and some places like that, I think connecting to the grid is part of the solution.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that brings us to the last question, and running low on time, is that the show is going to be focused in other ways on what the grid is. And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, because I really, it seems like a very simple thing that's quite complicated, that you've basically just got a bunch of wires all over that transmit power from where it's produced to where it's used. But it seems like there's different operators and different grids. And here's where I need clarification. Say Sonoma Clean Power, which we're going to be hearing from on the show today, that is it. So if I had elected a different provider, the same power lines would be produced, I'd be buying from a different person, but through this, the same power is coming to my house. Is this correct? Or am I totally confused? Because when Sonoma Clean Power moved into Mendocino, we could elect it or choose something else. And here's where I really need clarification.
Yeah. So this is, I took a whole class in law school that talked about this for like several classes. So I will try my best to simplify. The wires, right? The actual transmission is all owned by PG&E. It's all owned by your investor-owned utility. Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago, the state of California passed a law that said, if you want to, you can buy your power from someone else, even though it's still using those wires to get to you. And that's what Sonoma Clean Power is doing. So they are selling you the power, but they're using PG&E's wires to get it to you. Right. Mm-hmm. And so if you elect to join Sonoma Clean Power, you are saying, I want to pay like a different rate in order to get more clean power, you know, on the grid to my house. Now, frankly, electrons don't care like how they were generated. Right. Like if you make an electron with coal or if you make an electron with wind, it's the same electron. And it all just flows based on demand, so where it needs to go on the grid. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, once it's in the grid, it all mixes together, kind of like a river, like trying to keep track of like a drop of water in a river. Mm-hmm. But the idea is that if enough people add clean electricity to that river, over time, the river gets cleaner and cleaner and cleaner. That's mm-hmm. That's the idea. Did that yeah. answer the question?
Actually, that's a brilliant analogy. Thank you.
Okay.
Does it? So then Sonoma Clean Power, using them as the test case, are they're not producing power per se, are they? Are they buying from, say, the geothermal fields in Sonoma County and then selling to us through PG&E's grid?
I don't know Sonoma Clean Power as well as I know my local community choice aggregator, which is the name for these things. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I believe that's how it works. Is they are an energy purchaser, not an energy producer.
Yeah.
But they are, you know, purposefully and potentially at like a higher cost to you, purchasing cleaner power and creating that consumer demand for cleaner power.
Yeah, yeah. It's a market-based solution, but in this case, it seems like it maybe is a good one.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the idea that the California legislature had when they allowed these things. Because it used to be, you know, PG&E was literally the only game in town. Yeah. And it was a full, what's the word, monopoly. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that is almost all. Of course, I always like to ask you at the end, how can people support the important work that you and Epic are doing?
Yeah, so you can visit our website, wildcalifornia.org. Like Chad was saying, we have a lot of blog posts about all this. We also have a newsletter that comes out every 2 weeks that keeps people updated. And yeah, I'm always happy to come back on and talk. This offshore wind stuff is like, it's a huge undertaking, and there's so much to talk about. And so if folks are interested, I'm more than happy to come back and try to fill you guys in on what your neighbors up to the north are doing in our ocean.
we will definitely have you back.
Great.
Yeah. Thanks, Matt.
That was Matt Simmons. And I want to point out that not all environmental folks around here are completely in favor of this wind power thing off of Humboldt Bay, this giant array of giant dinosaurs. But on the other hand, I think we have to be realistic that we are not cutting back. Very few of us are cutting back. We are not saving the amount of power that we need to avoid needing this power. I'm not sure what to say about that. The sci-fi aficionado in me thinks that these giant, massive beasts are really kind of cool. And the naturalist side of me is utterly horrified. Just don't know what to say about it. But I think the race is on and the clock is ticking. And anything we can do to decarbonize is a big deal. But they're still giant towers. Thank you so much for spending the last hour with me, Chad Swimmer, on the Ecology Hour, based at KZYXZ, Listener Power Community Radio from Mendocino County and beyond. Yes, KZYX, thank you for being the base for all of my shows and for keeping us informed and entertained for going on 35 years now. Check out kzyx.org for sure. I'd like to thank Claudia and Tanya from Sonoma Clean Power for their information and Evan Mills for putting together a link sheet for us that'll be posted on our show notes. Of course, Matt Simmons and Richard Ginger, welcome again and thanks for the great work to our new intern, Abilene Comstra. And as always, to Vail Gauthier, to the Cloud Forest Institute for helping us out, KMUD, Redwood Community Radio, KCXU, Engaging Diverse Community Voices from San Jose, KAKX, and to Gene Parsons and George Russell for providing some music for this show. Good music, that is. Yeah. And as always, the views and opinions expressed on this show are those only of myself and my guests and not of the staff or management of any station that chooses to air this program. If you would like to pass on my information to other people, go to disquietpride.buzzsprout.com where you can listen to as many shows as I've managed to get up in time. See you next time. Bye.